The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's not George Brockler, thank God. It's John Caldera. Give me a call, 303-696-1971. I wanted to know a little bit more about this really terrible law or bill coming up that sounds so reasonable that it allows gun manufacturers to be sued when their product is being used for terrible crimes. Right now they enjoy certain legal protections. Whenever I have a question about these type of things, there's only one nationally renowned expert I go to. Fortunately, he's a dear friend and a colleague, Dave Koppel of Independence Institute. And so I decided to wake him up out of his hangover and see if he could join me on this. Dave, thanks for spending some time with me. I appreciate it.
I'm happy to do it.
First of all, most important question, Billy Thorpe and I were asking each other earlier this morning, very important. What's your favorite album cover?
Oxymoxoa by the Grateful Dead, which came out about 1969. And it's a favorite because I got to interview and Rick Griffin, the artist for that, and wrote a magazine article about him.
What about Steal Your Face?
Oh, that's iconic, and of course that's the Grateful Dead skull with a focus on the skull, and it's red, white, and blue with a white lightning bolt through the middle. That certainly became an iconic symbol of them, and obviously the Tampa Bay Lightning kind of swiped it or paid tribute to it. That's fine, but I liked kind of the complexity of Rick Griffin's stuff. And besides, I never met the artist who did "Steal Your Face."
How is it that you became a
Skull
and
Roses would be the bigger the better album cover? That's a
so for
double,
those who don't know,
fold
Dave,
out, but,
Dave Koppel, who one of the reasons the Heller decision, which affirmed that. In fact, the Second Amendment is an individual right, not a collective right. The McDonald case, where the Supreme Court made it clear that right is belongs to the states, not just the federal government. Dave's work was crucial on that. The recent Bruin decision, Dave's work was crucial on that. Who would have thunk that the mastermind behind all this incredible originalistic work from the founders that the justices rely so heavily on is a deadhead. Why the dead?
Well, they're more interesting. Unlike, you know, the sort of like more simplistic bands you like The Who, every show they play was different, you know. And back in the olden days, they'd be making it up as they go along. But, you know, so
because they were,
you know,
forgetful because of all their drug-addled brain cells don't work.
Well, that may well be, but if you followed a Who tour from coast to coast, you'd hear the same program show after show after show. And then the Grateful Dead were unique in, you know, one night would be completely different from the next, which leads to quality variations. I mean, some nights were really weak, and other nights were spectacular. But as with golf and gambling, that variable payoff is one of the things that's exciting and fun.
Fair enough. By the way, I'm pretty sure that Beethoven was pretty consistent too. But, you know, to each of their own.
No, but I don't think Beethoven virtually never jammed in concert, as far
that's
as
true.
I know.
Except when he played with John Mayer.
Yeah.
All right, so explain this. Explain the protection that gun manufacturers have against getting sued, for crimes committed. You just put out a paper that people can get at thinkfreedom.org. It's also at completecolorado.com. I found it fascinating. And the tie-in with Jim Crow and Jim Crow-era laws was mind-blowing to me. And I don't even like the dead. And it was still mind-blowing to me. Put it together for me, because this, as the Colorado legislature is about ready to rip open something that is far bigger than the gun debate. I think this is a dangerous, dangerous precedent to make. No matter how you feel about guns, this is much bigger than just gun control. This is a tactic that I think bleeds into all sorts of areas that if you're a civil libertarian, you should be very scared about.
Sure. The basic principle is, let's apply it to automobiles. If you've got an automobile that's defective, you know, you're driving down the road and, the axle brakes on a car that's only got 4,000 miles on it, that was defectively manufactured, and if there's an accident that results, then you can sue the automobile manufacturer, as you absolutely should be able to do. And that's always been the law in Colorado and nationally, and it should be the law, for making a genuinely defective product. But let's say Ford makes a car in Michigan. They sell it to a retailer in Kansas, complying with all the laws. The person pays the taxes, and then 10 years later, the car is stolen from its owner in Wichita, Kansas. It's used in the thief in from Wichita, sells it on the black market, and it's bought in Colorado illegally, never registered, and somebody uses that car to perpetrate some crime, like a kidnapping, or to run over someone, or
I think about what happened. I'm trying to remember the neo-Nazi rally, and the guy ran over somebody.
Exactly, drive the car into a crowd,
and right
after the car has been stolen, should you be able to sue Ford for that? And the answer is no. In our law, and the reason for that is a principle called proximate cause, that an intervening act by somebody else, proximate cause is, as the Colorado Supreme Court says, like all courts do, it's a very old concept in common law. If you want to sue somebody in court for a tort, a wrong, there's got to be proximate cause. There's got to be a chain of causation that is close enough between what the person you're suing, the defendant, did versus the person who's doing the suing. And the longstanding principle is an intervening criminal act breaks that proximate cause chain of causation. So Ford doesn't get sued, and they say, no, really, everything we did was legal, selling it to the car dealership in Wichita, and so was the car dealership's action in Wichita, and then the theft 10 years later of the car, and then the later criminal crime one, and then the criminal misuse of the car later in Colorado, those break the chain of causation. You can't sue Ford for that, for the fact that somebody used a stolen car and drove it into a crowd in Loveland 15 years after the car was manufactured. So that's the baseline of the normal law in the United States. This bill before the legislature it's Senate Bill 23169. Just give me one second. I'll give you the exact.
I'll tell you what. You keep on talking, and I'll pull it up for you.
Okay. So the bill that passed the Senate State Affairs Committee would abolish that. And it would say don't worry about proximate cause. The fact that a gun manufacturer makes a gun legally in Massachusetts, follows all the laws, sells it to a retail, to a wholesaler in Tennessee, follows all the laws, wholesaler sells it to a retailer in Kansas who follows all the laws, retailer sells it to a gun owner in Wichita, Kansas, again, let's say, who follows all the laws, including whatever Kansas laws there are about gun storage. And then the gun gets stolen, and 10 years after it was manufactured, and on the black market, sold into Colorado, and then it's used in a crime. And, you know, let's say it's used in a liquor store robbery, and maybe the store owner is injured, but he recovers, and but he lost, you know, $900 out of his till in the liquor store robbery. Under the bill that's being advanced in Colorado by the gun prevention lobby.
It's by the way, it's Senate Bill 168.
Okay, Senate Bill 168 would say, after this scenario I just described, that the gun manufacturer back in Massachusetts and the wholesaler and the retailer in Kansas, all of whom complied with the laws, can be sued because the stolen gun was used in a crime in Colorado. And on top of that, because it gets rid of our normal rules of proximate cause about an intervening criminal act. Then on top of that, let's say the liquor store owner says, "Well, I'm not going to sue Smith and Wesson, you know, for the gun store in Wichita, because somebody used a stolen gun and injured me." That doesn't even matter. The Colorado Attorney General can bring a lawsuit against Smith and Wesson for that liquor store robbery in Colorado, and this makes it even better. If you believe in gun prevention, which is eliminating the gun industry, all the gun manufacturers and retailers, the Attorney General can bring a suit even if the actual victim doesn't want to, or the Attorney General can designate someone else to bring the suit, like one of the gun ban lobbies. So he can tell one of the Bloomberg groups or the Brady group, which has been bringing abusive lawsuits ever since the 1970s, he can tell a gun ban group, you can sue Smith & Wesson for this liquor store robbery that happened 15 years after Smith & Wesson made the gun.
All right,
that's obviously a strategy to eliminate firearms businesses through the cost of litigation, which has been a strategy that the gun prevention lobbies have been using for years.
So let me see if I'm following you here. Let me kick this back and see if I'm understanding it. So there have been – we're not talking about just suing gun manufacturers. This is a very narrow kind of case or narrow kind of bill, because let's say I'm the perpetrator. I go off and buy the gun legally, and then I commit the crime.
You bought a legal gun, okay?
I have a legal gun and I commit the crime. Does this bill, should it pass as is, affect the ability for either the liquor store in this case or the AG or whoever the AG appoints to sue? Or is it just in the cases of I have a stolen gun from out of state?
You can sue for any reason. All you have to do is say, well, there's something that I think is reasonable that somebody should have done. You know, the manufacturer or the
you gave me the most ludicrous example.
Yeah.
Okay. So it could be I could have legally purchased the gun. I could have stolen the gun. I could have stolen the gun that was stolen from somebody else way down the line that had nothing to do with the manufacturer. This opens it up to every conceivable case to get to the gun manufacturer.
Well, right, and one of the theories that the gun ban lobbies have brought suits on is saying, well, you know, yeah, we know that the criminal stole it, but you deliberately made this gun, Smith & Wesson, or, you know, Colt, or Glock, or, you know, whoever, Ruger, in a way that you knew would be useful for criminals. And so, therefore, we get to, we the gun ban lobby, who will be designated by the Attorney General to bring suits, we get to bring the suit. We get to sue because you made a gun that was deliberately attractive for criminals. And what they mean by that, as they've shown in their prior lawsuits in other states, is this was a gun that was well suited for self-defense. And in fact, you used advertising that indicated you think this is a good gun for self-defense, and you thought that would be attractive to consumers. Well, the fact is, everything that makes any feature in a gun that makes it useful for self-defense also makes it useful for offense, for crime. That's just the nature of a gun, that it can be used at a distance, that it might have enough stopping power to immediately incapacitate an adult male who's attacking you, and that very feature that makes it good for self-defense likewise makes it good for offense. So, yeah, you can say sue Smith & Wesson and say you deliberately made a gun that you knew was well-suited for killing or injuring people, which would be true.
Let me ask you this. Thinking about the incredibly profitable lawsuits against the tobacco industry, which led to the master settlement of the AGs around the states, which was a cash cow, not only for the states, all 50 states, but a cash cow for the attorneys, the trial attorneys that got a big percentage of this. I mean, pictures of the yachts that attorneys bought.
Right.
The ones that were hired by this state or that state. And by the way, hats off to our former Attorney General, Gail Norton, who did not hire an out-of-contract attorneys, but used in-house Colorado attorneys when they did the master settlement. So Colorado did not have to give 20-30% to some private firm when they sued tobacco companies. You know, but that was a cash cow. And so they have a bunch of there were a bunch of attorneys just licking their chops to get their 30% out of big tobacco. Well, my God, the idea of suing, you know, big guns, getting 30% out of suing Ruger and Smith and Wesson and Colt for mass shootings, that's got to be a tempting target.
Well, it is, and the gun ban lobby that amplified that is called the Brady Center. They keep changing their name. They used to be the National Center to Control Handguns, then they changed their name to Handgun Control, and then they now use the name Brady and keep changing the permutations of that. But they started working with the lawyers who had masterminded these successful tobacco lawsuits to do similar things against the firearms businesses. But there's a really important difference here is the tobacco, you know, big tobacco, Philip Morris and those kinds of things. You know, they're huge companies, and they could pay the litigation costs forever. The reasons they settled this case is were not that they were running out of money to pay their lawyers. They would never, ever run out of money to pay their lawyers. The firearms businesses are very different. You could take all the entire firearms businesses, in the, you know, all the gun manufacturers in the country, and put them together. you wouldn't even combined have a Fortune 500 company.
Right.
So
the money just isn't there. While gun phobes think there's big guns, there's a big gun industry. Big gun doesn't actually exist. It's not like pharma.
Right.
It's not like tobacco. There is no big gun.
It's just a smaller industry. And so here the thing was, as the lawyers said, when they were bringing these suits and bringing dozens of suits around the country, we don't have to win the case in court. We are going to get them to comply with what we want, just by the cost of litigation, because they can't afford to defend against all these cases at once. And that was true when they had dozens of suits going on in the late 90s and early part of the 21st century. Three gun companies were already driven out of business, including one of the top 10. So they will. This is
when was that again?
It started in 98, and Colorado had enacted an anti-lawsuit abuse prevention bill in 86, and Colorado strengthened that bill in 2000. And part of what the Senate committee passed yesterday was to eliminate the lawsuit abuse prevention laws and instead enact a lawsuit abuse encouragement law.
And what company almost went out of business or did go out of business?
Davis was among the ones that went out of business, and there were some other smaller ones, but Davis was a top.
And
10.
Didn't Colt almost go out of business?
Colt was on the well. Colt, their response was, "We're going to stop selling handguns to consumers."
Think about that. We make guns. So instead of going out of business, we'll just stop selling guns. So I guess
then
we'll
maybe they'll leave us alone. And Smith & Wesson actually in 2000 caved to the lawsuits because it was owned by a British conglomerate. And the conglomerate ordered it to settle. And the terms of the surrender were, among other things, that the company's business practices would no longer be controlled by the management for the benefit of the shareholders. They would be controlled by a committee run by by politicians allied with the gun ban lobby.
Wow.
And Smith & Wesson agreed to that, and the deal was, we'll dismiss the suits against you, which actually didn't work out. Smith & Wesson still kept getting sued in new cases. And actually, that agreement never went into effect. So, Smith & Wesson, surrender didn't work. Go ahead.
I'm hearing you right. The anti-gun groups didn't need to win the cases. They just needed to keep doing cases because legal costs would bankrupt the gun companies. And that was their strategy.
All the cases were structured to do exactly that, so that you couldn't consolidate them. The lawsuits back then were being done by, say, the tobacco attorneys, who were now living so high on the hog because they were now basically had a lifetime income paid for by big tobacco as part of the deal they made on their own lawsuits.
I got to take a breather here, Dave.
Yeah.
When I come back, I want to move forward here and extrapolate what's going to happen when this gets passed in Colorado and potentially in other states, just what that's going to mean and what we're opening the doors to here. This is a dangerous, dangerous bill. And what other industries this could happen to, and particularly if let's say the same strategy is in place when mean, awful Republicans instead of crazed progressives run the joint. Dave Koppel's with me, 303-696-1971. In for George, I'm John Caldera. Keep it here, 710 KNUS. It's 34 minutes after. I'm John Caldera, in for George. Give me a call, 303-696-1971. I don't think there is anyone more knowledgeable about the founders' intent, the ins and outs of the Second Amendment, and the practical effects of what well-intentioned gun laws do than Dave Koppel of the Independence Institute. Senate Bill 168 would unshackle a bunch of gun lawsuits. Dave, right now, if I understand it, there are federal and state protections against needless, abuse, frivolous gun lawsuits.
Yeah, junk suits.
Now, if I take my Ruger, I'm a big Ruger fan. I think it's kind of the Toyota of guns. They're not flashy, but every time you pull the trigger, the engine will start, the gun will go bang. I just love Rugers.
Right.
But if for some reason I pull the trigger and the gun blows up in my hand and it explodes and blows off my fingers, I can still sue the company because it malfunctioned, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But, and of course, you should be able to do that.
And that I can still do that under the current laws. But if I go and commit a crime with my gun, I can't sue my victim can't sue Ruger for that.
That's currently true, but that's going to that will have changed by the time Governor Polis, once Governor Polis signs the bill. And remember, even if your victim doesn't want to sue Ruger, the Attorney General or the Attorney General's designee, like a gun ban organization, can still sue Ruger.
Now, if I instead, going back to Ford, or let's just say I use a Louisville Slugger, and I use the Louisville Slugger to commit a crime.
Yeah.
And can the company, can my victim sue Louisville Slugger?
Well, they could bring the case, but the case would get thrown out immediately because there's no proximate cause. Your intervening criminal act between the manufacturer of the baseball bat versus the crime that was perpetrated means there's no proximate cause. But this bill...
But I whacked the guy on the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah, yes, that,
if
that's
the baseball,
right.
If the guy didn't... If they didn't make the baseball bat... Or, all right, how about a knife? How about the knife? The guy made the knife, Buck Knives made the knife and advertised it as a good self-defense knife.
Right.
And I used that self-defense knife instead of self-defense, used it for offense.
Right.
Can they sue Buck?
They could bring a case in court, and the judge would throw it out on a motion to dismiss because there is obviously no proximate cause. Your intervening criminal act means there's no causation between the person who got stabbed versus the lawful manufacturer and proper sale of the knife. But that will change for guns. With guns, you will be able to sue because they eliminate proximate cause and get rid of intervening criminal act as a breaking the chain of proximate cause.
What's the difference between the gun and the knife then?
Because the gun industry is the industry that is being singled out for special abusive lawsuits by this legislature. Now, future legislatures may not like knives either. You know, there's a big, anti-knife campaign going on in England right now because they banned so many guns, and they still have, you know, and they have a very serious problem of knife crime in England. So, you know, maybe one day we'll have knife suits and anything else against any business that is unpopular with a current legislature. If they can do this to guns, which are for which there's a constitutional right to own, they can certainly do it to any other business, which is not part of the Constitution.
If this assumes that this passes, which I think is a pretty safe assumption given this legislature.
Oh, it's controlled by the regressives, absolutely, so it's definitely going to pass.
Our governor knows better. Mind you, he has signed awful things in the past that he has known better. My sense is he has made a deal, and he is definitely going to sign this. In exchange, we're not going to see an assault weapon ban.
Well, that supposedly.
Supposedly.
That may not work out.
But, you know, I don't know why not. What I mean by that is he's already signed the end of statewide preemption, so assault weapon bans are de facto going to be the law in most of the populous areas around the state. So, you know, he's already
right.
done that.
And just remember, assault weapon is a completely bogus term.
Yeah, of course, of course.
It's for standard guns that have, you know, it's never had any fixed meaning. It's always just been the equivalent of what's the largest group of guns we can ban today by calling them assault weapons.
Right.
It's an infinitely expandable category.
Yeah, it's pornography. It's the I know it when I see it. It looks mean. There is no definition. There's just no workable definition. When you ask someone to define it, they can't. It's ridiculous. All right, but I guess my question being, when this passes, passes, what does it open the door to? Because it seems to me, and you and I are old enough to remember when liberals cared about the ends not justifying the means. And this is absolutely the ends justifying everything. It seems like this opens the door to all sorts of terrible ways of getting to what you want. And that this could really bite them in the ass, in that the way they're getting at it, it could really open the door for all sorts of bad precedent.
Well, yes, and obviously it's a tactic that can be used by if this is upheld by the courts, then legislators in other states can enact all. This Colorado law allows lawsuits for things that didn't happen in Colorado. You know, remember the manufacturer, I mean, we were talking in the hypothetical about a gun that was made in Massachusetts and sold in Kansas and then eventually used in a crime in Colorado. So you can sue people out of state for doing things that were completely lawful in the state they did them in. And yeah, the abortion ban advocates can find ways to sue manufacturers of medical equipment that's used in abortion, for example, or abortion pill makers and things like that. Even though, you know, somebody might be completely lawful in the states that it goes on in.
In other words,
drive them out of business too.
If there were, even though abortion is legal in Colorado, if there was a product or device that's manufactured here, somebody could, in another state, could do the same type of thing and put them out of business because it's manufactured here.
Well, sure. Let's say we got an abortion pill that's available by prescription. And you manufacture it in, let's say, Massachusetts, and sell it at in complete compliance with Colorado law, at a pharmacy in Colorado with a person who has a proper prescription from a proper doctor, And then the person takes that abortion pill or set of pills out of state and brings them to a state, let's say Oklahoma or Mississippi or whatever, where abortions are illegal or some abortions are illegal, and somebody uses that for an illegal abortion in that lawfully sold Colorado pill for an abortion in a state where it's not legal. You can absolutely use the same principles that the Colorado regressives are pushing, are going to enact for guns. The same thing could be enacted by Mississippi for abortion pills. And so, yes, and then you could have the Attorney General of Mississippi or an abortion ban group designated by the Attorney General of Mississippi go and sue the Colorado pharmacy for the fetal homicide that took place in Mississippi with the Colorado pill.
Wow. Wow, that's brilliant.
Brilliant and dangerous.
Evil.
And, you know, well, and wrong. You know, you're supposed to, states are supposed to respect each other. And, you know, if something goes on in one state that you don't like, the legislature in another state is not supposed to be able to ban that in a sister state.
Do you think when this passes that it is federally constitutional?
I think there's two problems. One is, like you said, the U.S. Constitution. You look at the beginning of the Bill of Rights. There are two man-made objects that are protected by the Bill of Rights as natural rights. One is the printing press, and the other is arms, First Amendment and Second Amendment. You know, let's say some newspaper, hypothetically, the Denver Post prints an article which libels an individual. You can sue the Denver Post over that, but you don't sue the company that made the printing press that the Denver Post used to print the libel. Because if you could sue the printing press manufacturers every time a printing press was misused, you would drive the printing press business manufacturers out of business. Same thing for firearms. If you can sue the manufacturer of a firearm that acted when the manufacturer acted lawfully in every way, whenever a gun is used in a crime, then you'll drive the gun manufacturers out of business, which, of course, is the whole point of this. Yeah. So I think, A, it violates the U.S. It violates the Constitution directly. And there's also a federal law to enact it specifically to prevent lawsuit abuses like this for firearms businesses. And that preempts, I believe, the Colorado law. A similar law enacted in New Jersey was recently put under a preliminary injunction by a federal district judge there. On the other hand, a federal district judge in New York, which passed the first of these laws in new laws in 2021, the federal district judge there upheld it, and now that case is on appeal to the Second Circuit.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Out of all the laws that are attacking gun owners, I find this one to be the most stealthy and dangerous. And think of what they've got going on. They've got this. They've got expanding red flags. They've got raising the age to buy. They have this so-called assault weapon ban. And what else do they have cooking?
A minimum waiting period to buy a gun of 3 days, which can, statewide, which can be expanded to infinite length by localities.
All right, that one's worse.
No, I mean all those bills are gun control bills, and I think, you know, some are more dangerous than others. You know, I think the concept of red flag is okay, and I've testified for it in the U.S. Senate twice, as long as it has good due process protections, which the Colorado version does not. But this one is it's the big one, because this is the mechanism which, if it's allowed to exist, will eliminate the U.S. firearms industry.
And that's the whole
point. There'll be no more gun stores and no more gun makers in the long run if this exists, which is the objective of the gun ban groups, and you know this will get them a long way in that direction. Not you know 2 months after it's enacted, but over time, it will drive the firearms business out of existence. Oh, and one other thing in this new bill, it also outlaws design or marketing that is aimed at minors. So if you're a company like if your business sells single shot 22 caliber rifles,
yep,
you know, great guns for instructing young people in safe firearms use, great starter gun, and you're a business that sells these rifles, let's say, to gun clubs, to 4-H programs, to the Boy Scouts or whatever, to teach gun safety, that'll be illegal in Colorado.
Lovely. I got to run, Dave. This is just too scary. Dave, I'm going to let you go. Thanks for all your work. Go to thinkfreedom.com to learn more about what Dave does. Dave, I'll let you go. Have a day. Thanks for making mine more miserable.
I always enjoy doing that.
Thanks, Dave. I'm John Caldera. Keep it right here. You're on 710 KNUS. We got about 6 minutes to the top. I'm John Caldera in for George. 303-696-1971. Russ has been so very patient. Hey, Russ, thanks for staying on the line. Welcome. You're with John Caldera.
Yeah, thanks, John. Yeah, I've been patient. I listened to all that stuff. I think gun owners are the more, you know, need to be more mean than defending their guns. They need to defend their First Amendment rights as well, which is comes before the Second Amendment, and they don't do that very well. I mean, it just seems to be the gun argument: either you're for it or you're not, and then that's the end of the story. I mean, there's more to the story why people kill and why these, especially these serial killers, when they hit a school or something or whatever, every once in a while, every 6 months, you can count on it happening. And all you ever hear about is the gun. Either it's the gun that did it or it's not the gun that did it. And then that's the end of the story. If you want to get mean, you want to beat these people. I mean, it's no reason why, it's not hard to understand why people want to say, yeah, get rid of guns, regulate them, blah, blah, blah. It's the only story out there. It's the only story we have to choose on and act on and do that stuff. It's the only choice we as a society have is, you know, the Democrats
well,
come up with something.
Here, let's just say it certainly isn't the only story. It's the only story that a left-leaning media likes to grab onto. It's one of the things that we do at Independence with our faster training, which is to ask the question, do you want to feel safe or do you want to be safe? And if you want to be safe, let's talk about arming people in schools and training them to defend our kids. That's a faster program. You can learn about that at thinkfreedom.org. Thinkfreedom.org. Please check out the Independence Institute at, surprisingly, thinkfreedom.org. George, thank you for letting me sit in for you. Keep it right here. You're on 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.